friends, and it's time for So What's Your Story. I'm Warren Holloman. Tonight I'll be your host. Joining me to help with the show, as always, is Nicole Rocher-Lynn. Hi, Nicole. How you doing? How you doing, Nicole? Nicole is our engineer, and she's our media relations guru. And also Hank is here, and they're both helping with the show. And tonight, Nicole and Hank and I are privileged, as always, to be part of the coolest team on the radio, along with co-host Mary Edgerton and Greg Aldell. We're proud to be the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. And we're right here on listener-sponsored 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. The reason we all do this show is because we believe that every day of every life is a story worth telling, and every story has the power to bring meaning to our lives, to bind us together as family and friends, and as a community. And speaking of binding us together, tonight's guest storyteller has a knack for discovering connections between the many people he comes across in his daily life, and then crafting these incredible narratives that take us with him on his journeys of self-discovery. Mark Pikus won the Houston Moth Story Slam in January with a thriller about a series of coincidences involving two strangers, both of whom just happened to be Russian, who popped in and out of his life a few years ago. He's going to tell that story, plus two others that focus on a different theme, exploring his genealogical roots, and how Baptists and Mormons helped him on that journey, which should be rather interesting, since, after all, Mark is Jewish. So with that introduction, Mark, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thank you, Warren.
We're delighted you're here, and I see you've brought your wife, Nancy. Hi, Nancy.
Hi there.
Thanks so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
I understand you're going to participate in one of these stories.
Yes, I am.
We're delighted. Well, first of all, I got to say, Mark, how much I love the story you told at the Moth a few months ago. And I hope you noticed how much the audience liked it as well.
I was aware when I was up there, and you can't see the audience, but you can hear them. And I was thinking, okay, I think that they're really reacting strongly as I'm telling this story. But it's different when you're up on the stage or when you're part of the audience reacting to a story.
Maybe you should explain. I know what you're talking about not seeing the audience. What are you?
Well, you're on stage and there's bright lights in your face.
Yeah.
And you literally cannot see it. You're looking into a black pit.
Yeah.
So you know there are people out there. You can hear them. And you've seen them before, but you can't see them when you're on the stage.
And you feel like the proverbial deer in the headlights, literally.
Well, maybe you did.
Well, what was it like when you got the applause afterwards? Because I remember you got a very uproarious applause.
It certainly was gratifying. I will tell you, I'm going to reveal a secret here. In high school and my first 2 years of college, I was planning to be a famous movie star.
Oh,
and I did a lot of theater. Uh-huh. And especially in college, I decided I wanted to, of course, have the romantic leads. I never was cast in those parts. But I often was cast in supporting roles that were humorous and often show-stopping. I guess the directors saw that in me.
Yeah.
And I know that this sounds very self-serving, but I'll just go ahead and say it. Way back in college, 40 years ago, I was used to leaving a stage to applause.
Oh, okay. Well, the reason you got so much applause this time was because you fully deserved it.
Thank you.
And it was a great story. And that's going to be one of the stories you tell. One of the funny things about that story, it was about coincidences. And when Dusty Rhodes called your name, our next storyteller is Mark Pikus. I was sitting there saying, I know that guy. And you stood up. You were only a few rows in front of me. And I realized that's the guy that I share the satellite office with at work. We work at MD Anderson with 20,000 people, and and I didn't know you told stories, and you didn't know that I told stories.
So you worked together, and you didn't know each other.
Well,
you didn't see each
really
other.
We worked together, but we knew each other because of proximity.
Yeah,
at times. Yeah.
Okay. Curious.
We shared a satellite office, and we would say hi to each other. And he was always nice to me about not running me off when he had it reserved. But it was that was a coincidence as well. Well, let's get into your first story. It's a story about going to Europe with all those Baptists. Is there anything you need to tell our listeners to help them?
Well, sure, about why we were going to Europe with a bunch of Baptists.
Yeah.
Well, my career, I've been teaching English to speakers of other languages. For many years, I did this at Houston Community College. And at one point, I was promoted to an academic a department chair. And there wasn't a lot of training for it, so I decided, well, how can I get training? And I thought, of course, I'll just get a doctorate in educational administration. So there was a program at Baylor University in Waco. It was a commuting program. We'd go up once a month, and you took your classes as a group. And part of that program was a foreign trip one summer. And my cohort, it turned out that that trip was to Central and Eastern Europe, which is where my family and my wife's family are from. Right. And so I said, Nancy, you've got to come with. This is going to be an amazing trip. So I want to talk about two things that happened on that trip because they really speak to how we remember things.
Yeah.
We're big opera fans. And so we were in Vienna and we said, well, let's go to the opera while we're in Vienna. And there's two main opera houses in Vienna, the Staatsoper, which does, that's the big opera house. The night that we could go, they were doing Wagner's Götterdämmerung, which is 5 hours. It's the last of the Ring cycle. We hadn't seen the first three. We said, maybe we'll skip this. And the other opera house is the Volksoper, where everything is done in German. And it's a smaller opera house. And the night we were there, they were going to be doing The Marriage of Figaro. And we thought, well, that's always worth seeing. So we got tickets, and of course, this is an Italian opera. We were going to be hearing it in German, but we thought that's fine. And so this was the B opera house. And it turns out they have two rotating casts, and the night that we were there, we were seeing the B cast.
The B cast.
The B cast in the B house. Yeah, okay. But whatever. It's opera in Vienna.
Yeah.
So we had gone to dinner. We left the restaurant to catch the light rail to go to the opera house. It was kind of drizzling. And we said, oh, we forgot our packages, our shopping in the restaurant. We had to run back, so we're a little bit rushed. We get to the opera house, and we run up. We take our seats. The overture starts, and then the opera starts. And if you've seen the opera, it actually starts with Figaro. He's measuring cloth and singing the numbers of the measurements. And 2 minutes after it started, my wife and I turned to each other, and we both said simultaneously, this is the B cast? I mean, I can't describe how magical that evening was. It was so amazing. Who cares that we're listening to, you know, German, which we didn't understand. The surtitles were in, you know, well, they weren't surtitles. It was in German. It's in Austria. So it was just wonderful. And we've told that story, and either one of us tells it, but we remember it exactly the same.
Yeah.
Later in the trip, we actually were in Krakow, Poland, and as a group, we went to Auschwitz. And this was a very difficult day for us. I'm sure you can understand that. And our group was very, very understanding of our needs as Jews visiting Auschwitz. And that evening, we actually went to a kind of a small provincial capital, not too far from Krakow, called Bielsko-Biala. And we were hosted by a Lutheran congregation. And of course, Lutherans are a very small minority in Poland, which is overwhelmingly Catholic. And they told us when we were there that they had made arrangements for my wife and I that evening after dinner to attend a meeting of a local group called the Polish-Jewish Friendship Society. Mm-hmm. So we went there. With a translator, our guide, a translator. We sat down. They put some food in front of us, some matzah rye, and there was a lecture going on, and our translator leaned over and said, the discussion is about whether the author Jerzy Kaczynski wrote in English or whether he actually wrote in Polish and had his novels translated. And we said, okay, that's nice. And when the lecture was over, they turned to us, and our translator said, they want to know what the American Jewish community thinks about the question of Jerzy Kaczynski and what language he wrote in. And I turned to my wife, and I said, you can take this one, honey. So my wife is a Jewish educator, and she stood up, and she said, the Jewish community in the United States is very concerned with issues of continuity and tradition and making sure that future generations know that they are Jewish and are proud of it. And we haven't really discussed this issue of Jerzy Kaczynski yet. And the meeting kind of broke up, and we were chatting with some of the people who were there, many of whom were older, but there were people of various ages. And then a little interaction happened, and I'm going to turn this over to my wife, Nancy, who tells this story quite well.
Well, I was speaking to a man named Mr. Schreiber, and to the woman who was the head of this group, Tilla, and while I was speaking to Mr. Schreiber, a little boy, who was probably about 7 or 8 years old, came over to us, and I have to tell you what I was wearing because this is important. I was wearing a really ugly white sweatshirt that had bands of red and blue and yellow because it was actually quite cold. And so the little boy walks up to me and he says, yellow. And I looked at him and looked down at my sweatshirt and I pointed to the yellow and I said, that's right, this is yellow and this is red and this is blue. I can't help myself. I'm a teacher. And this little boy got this look of disgust on his face and he just sort of waved me away and he walked off. And I was continuing to talk to Mr. Schreiber and the little boy came back over. And he looked at me and he said in perfect Hebrew, Manishma, what's up? My mouth sort of fell open and I looked at Mr. Schreiber and Tilla. Mr. Schreiber said, yes, we are Jewish here and we know we're Jewish. That one over there, that's my daughter, the one with the dark hair, and that's her son over there. He's about 15 and they all know they're Jewish and they are learning Hebrew. And Tilla, at that point, grabbed my arm, and she said to me, go back to the United States and tell them there are Jews here in Poland, and we are surviving.
And now what's interesting about this story is we have done exactly what Tilla asked us to do. We came back. We have told this story for the past 24 years. When we would first start telling it, Nancy would tell it, and I would, as, you know, because I'm the man and I have to do my mansplaining thing, I'd say, no, he didn't really say that. No, he didn't really look at you disgusted. Well, it wasn't exactly like that. And she was a good sport because she knows me very well. But eventually, I kind of stopped doing that. And I said, you know, she's telling the story. It's fine. It's a good story. And then at one point, I remember realizing she's telling that story the same way every time, and I keep thinking, no, that's not really the way it happened, but I can't remember how it really happened. And I realized, well, what she tells is the real story. Whatever might have actually transpired, the real story is the one that she tells, because the purpose of it was to let people know that there are Jews in Poland who know they're Jewish and expressing their Judaism. And that's what was really important about it. The exact details, I don't know if I remember them or if she remembers them. It's something like that. And very recently, I heard a really interesting quote by the author Anaïs Nin, who said, we remember things as we are, not as they are. And I just think that encapsulates this whole idea of memory so well, and how when we tell stories, they become us more than they stay the story that they might have been originally.
Wow. So that's kind of a story within a story. If you're just joining us, I'm Warren Holloman. You've been listening to storyteller Mark Pikus and Nancy Pikus here on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. So, Mark and Nancy, it sounds like you were not expecting to hear this boy speak Hebrew. Was that a surprise?
It was. It floored me. I did not expect it at all. And it was perfect to the situation and perfect, the accent, everything.
And keeping in mind that we were not more than 10, 15 miles from Auschwitz.
Yeah. Right.
It's an amazing thing to be that close to sort of the ground zero of the Holocaust and hear a young boy speaking Hebrew.
Right. And I still get goosebumps. I have them right now. Yeah. When I think about it, when I tell the story, it was truly an astonishing moment for me and very meaningful still.
So, goosebumps. Could you go back before, I guess, as you came into that meeting of the Polish Jewish Friendship Society, how would you describe your emotional state then? It sounds like it was a very kind of tender and maybe difficult.
I just remember it being, all right, well, let's just go and see who's there. And we have this nice translator with us who'll let us know what's going on, and that's great. One thing Nancy didn't mention is actually she does speak a little bit of Yiddish. So the conversation that we had was mostly Polish being translated into English and back. But every now and then, Nancy would use her Yiddish to communicate with
which
them.
Which I want to say, I really don't speak Yiddish. But somehow or another, that day, I spoke
Yiddish.
Yeah,
but you actually remember at the drugstore in Dresden, you actually right. bought some cough medicine for someone on our trip
phrase book
in Yiddish.
Yiddish yeah. right.
So again, this memory thing pops up. You didn't even see yourself as speaking Yiddish, but you must have remembered some words you heard in childhood. And
right. yeah. yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to chime in because, well, did you speak Yiddish or did you cough in Yiddish together?
Ich verstehe
ganz gut Yiddish, but ich kann nicht reden.
I
right?
was trying
you get,
to
you
speak
heard that,
German.
Right? Right.
I did. I understood
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, marvelous.
Right.
Well, then I know I'm not speaking Greek.
Right.
Well, so, what, could he you said, translate for?
He said, I can speak Yiddish, but I can't read it.
Right. Very good. Nice. Not
I bad. Actually took a. I actually took a little bit of Yiddish in college, but one semester. But it wasn't enough to be able to carry on.
Oh, I had to learn it to figure out what everybody was saying about me at home because that's all I heard.
But it was speaking to our emotional state. Actually, we were sort of laughing because our translator was a pastor, mm-hmm. and he looked at the meeting there, and he said, "Boy, there's more of my congregation here than I usually get on Sunday," and so but we were just sort of, I suppose we were sort of shell shocked and sort of just trying to get through.
And another thing
out what was gonna
that
happen.
I remember that yeah. evening, we were actually staying at somebody's home, kind of up in the hills, and it was late June, and we were freezing. Just freezing. But we stayed up very late, both writing intensely in our travel diaries, because we have to remember this day. You know, and I didn't think to go back. I know where those diaries are, but I didn't think to go
I
back and read them.
I thought to and didn't.
Yeah. So this is all fresh memories as we have, you know, we've not checked to see if any of this is what
but
we were, what happened at that time.
It's 24
years. 24
years. It was a very important trip.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a storytelling show, so there's so many layers here. And one of the layers is just the power of stories to preserve a people and a culture. You're telling this story 25 years later, and that's part of the preservation of your memory and your culture.
One thing we did that we send out either a Jewish New Year's or a New Year's card every year mm-hmm. to our, you know, relatives and friends. And that year, specifically because this woman, Tilla, asked us to, we put in a letter, which we always hate reading when we get them, telling that story about what happened in that little meeting. So we took her very seriously and said, okay, we will do this for you.
She was very quick. They were both very quick to tell us not only who they were and that they have the one grandchild this one has. And when I told them what I do, I said, I teach children about being Jewish. Oh, they were so, they were just overwhelmed. It was truly a remarkable evening. I don't think I've ever, ever had another one quite like it.
No, no, definitely not like that.
Well, that's a powerful experience, and I feel gratified that you shared it with us and with our listeners. Thank you so much. And I know you've got more stories to tell, but first I want to bring Nicole back into the conversation. Nicole, I'm curious, what were you thinking when Mark and Nancy were telling that story?
Well, the first thing I was thinking was it just reminds me why a man really needs his wife. Because we, we as women can complete the story. But besides that,
accurately.
It was real the way we understood it.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, Nancy was going to say the way I, but she changed that pronoun at the last moment.
Yeah, but I also really appreciated how passionate you guys are about teaching and educating others about your history and your family's history and wanting to carry it on and making sure that you're also going to research it yourself and not just, you know, reading what's in the books. You went and experienced it on your own, and the fact that you touched the lives of someone else and they touched the lives of yours, I wish everyone could see your faces here in the studio when when you speak about it. I mean, you guys are lit up. So I appreciate it. Thank you so much for sharing.
So thanks. Nicole was not only our engineer, but she's our social media guru. So I'm going to ask her to share with our listeners some updates about Facebook, YouTube, all that stuff.
Well, I am so happy to say that our Facebook has really, really, really magnified, and we appreciate everyone for coming and liking our page, liking our post, giving us your feedback. So make sure you continue to do so. Make sure you also tell a friend about it. And if you want to hear about our past stories as well, you always can go to our biggest sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, at www.houstonstorytellersguild.org. You can just go to the radio program and enjoy. Also, the Guild does have their swaps that meet the fourth Tuesday of every month, located at Temple Emmanuel, and that's at 1500 Sunset. Now, also to add, I have a great announcement. Next week, we're teaming up with Houston Storytellers Guild to co-sponsor professional storyteller Larry Thompson. We're bringing him to Houston to present a special storytelling concert on Saturday, June 3rd from 11 to 12:30 at Hickory Hollow on Heights Boulevard in Washington. Of course, there's no cost. Just get yourself some lunch and enjoy the narrative brilliance of this professional Texas teller. You'll also get a great sampling next Wednesday right here with Dr. Hank Rubicek, because Larry will be our special guest. Also, I don't want to forget our friends over there at The Moth that meets on the second Tuesday at Warehouse Live.
Thank you, Nicole. Lots going on. Now back to Mark. Mark, I understand your second story is kind of like your first one. It's a journey into your family's past. Any background our listeners need to know for this one?
Well, I'll just sort of give a general background about my family's past. My mother's father is actually my only grandparent that was born in this country, but he had many older siblings who were born actually in Riga, Latvia. And my mother's mother was from Odessa. Now it's the Ukraine. At that time, it was Russia. But she came over as a very young girl. So that side of the family was quite Americanized. My father's side, however, was very old country. His mother didn't. Both his parents came from small towns, small shtetls, near Minsk, which is now Belarus. And his mother did not come over to this country until after the Russian Revolution. And my father would hint that his mother had amazing stories to tell about how she would illegally cross the border into Poland and get forged papers so that her family could legally get out of Russia. But she never, ever said anything about that. I never heard those stories, just mentions of them. And my father's father came from a town called Uzda. I actually looked it up recently, and now it is actually a suburb of Minsk. At the time, it was probably, you know, just the tiny little town, a day's, you know, donkey ride from the big city. He came over as an adolescent. And this story actually starts right about the time of my bar mitzvah in 1970. My grandparents wanted to go to Israel. Since the time they had come to this country, they had never left, so of course they needed passports. My grandmother, who was the most organized human being who ever walked the face of the earth, had her naturalization papers, no problem, got a passport. My grandfather came over as a younger man, and he had two younger brothers, both of whom were estranged from the family. I actually never met them. And one of them had the family's papers. So he contacted him and said, I need the naturalization papers. And his brother said, well, I've lost them. So my dad took his father down to some office in downtown Los Angeles, which is where we lived, to see what he could do about getting a passport. And they said, well, what ship did he come over on? And my grandfather said, I don't remember. When was it? What was the date? I don't remember. You know. And so they went on, and it just was not working. And finally, my mother said to my father, you're too close to this. I will take care of it. I'll take your father down there and see about getting a passport. I have a brother-in-law who describes my mother as a force of nature, because when Joy Picus decides something is going to happen, you might as well just step aside because it is going to happen. So she went down there and probably just, as we say in Yiddish, hocked this guy's chinek, you know, just
drove him nuts.
Yeah, until he finally said, okay, I'm going to give you a paper which will allow you to get a passport. You can travel to Israel. You can get back in the country. But it doesn't prove citizenship. You're not going to be allowed to register and vote. And my mother said, he's been voting since Calvin Coolidge was president. What are you talking about? So my grandparents went to Israel. Everything was fine. My grandfather got a passport. About, I don't know, 12 or 15 years ago, I went to a conference of English teachers, which was being held in Salt Lake City. And as kind of connected with the conference, you could sign up for extra little day trips or things. And one of the things you could sign up for in advance was to work with a professional genealogist, of which there are many in Salt Lake City, because the Mormon Family History Library is there, which is the world's greatest concentration of genealogical documents. So I said, this sounds like fun. So I paid in advance. I sent information about my family. I met with the guy. We went to the library. He showed me how it works. He worked with me for about 3.5 hours, and I got all kinds of fascinating documents about my family, some of which I even brought with me because I always like to have visual aids even when I'm on the radio. But one thing that was very interesting was we found my great-grandfather's naturalization paper. So I'm looking at it right now, and it says Ephraim Picus, lives in Madison, Wisconsin. His date he was born, the date of his naturalization, which was June 16th, 1919. And then I said, okay, I want to find what boat and when my grandfather came over. And so I knew the name and I knew the place, but in this little town of Uzda, I know that Picus is a very rare last name, but basically everybody in the shtetl of Uzda had the last name Picus. And my grandfather's name, we called him Max. His name was Mordechai or Mordecha, nickname Muddle. Every kid in that town was named Muddle, and every adult was named Ephraim. And you see all these same names coming over, clearly not the same person. The ages are wrong to be my grandfather, until I found this one sheet which had Ephraim Picus, spelled P-I-K-U-S-S, from Uzda, and his son Reuben Mordech Picus, who was 15 years old, coming over on the ship Königin Luisa from Bremen, Germany, March 29th, 1912. So I took this and I showed it to my father, and he said, well, the names are right. And he said, Grandpa often referred to himself as Max Ray, which would be the Reuben Morda, just mm-hmm. the switch uh-huh. in order. The dates seem right. His father said he thought he was 13 when he came over, but 15 is close enough. Everything seems right. If he was 15 in 1912, he would have been 22 in 1919 when his father was naturalized. And that's too old to be naturalized with your parents. He's not a child anymore. So we think that my grandfather thought he was a naturalized citizen and wasn't. But he acted like a citizen. He voted. He paid his taxes. He did everything a good American should be, believing he was an American. But the best that we can figure out is he actually was never naturalized. And so it was the Mormons that helped us discover that. And this is a story that kind of, there was this, why couldn't my grandfather get, you know, the passport? Why were the papers lost? My mother says, bet, you know, his brother lost the papers. He had them. He just said, I don't want to show them because there is no naturalization paper for you. And it's like there's this ending to the story, but we still don't know if that's the true story. But it's so interesting just to think, what was the deal with my grandfather and his citizenship? He was an excellent American, voted every election from Calvin Coolidge through Richard Nixon. That's not necessarily who he voted for, but he always voted, always was a good American citizen, but maybe in reality he wasn't.
Well, Mark, that story strikes me as having absolutely no relevance to the current debates in the
absolutely in not. Not at all.
What would you like our listeners to think about and take from that story?
Well, I think that, you know, one thing is some people have very, very clear family histories that go way, way back, and they know they've got the family Bible, they've got the records, you know, and who married who and whose kid was who. And for so many people, like my wife and me, there's only a certain distance back we can go before there are no records. Mm-hmm. And then even here in this country where we have the records, they're kind of incomplete. You know, there seems to be things that maybe you're missing. And then also the stories that were never told in the family. My grandmother never told the stories of how she got her younger siblings and apparently even parents out of Russia. And my father's father, Ephraim, there I have the evidence, he came back and forth many times. Because when he first came to this country, it was well before his children did. That was common. But he went back, and it looks like a few times brought more of his children over each time.
Have you been able to go back and try to find any relatives in Belarus?
No, I did have my father's side of the family, my grandmother's younger sister. This was back when I was in high school, so it would have been the early 70s, went back to the Soviet Union and were able to contact family members. And I remember this very clearly. They said they were allowed to go up to a certain point on the road and the family members could come out from the town to that point in the road and they were allowed to visit for as long as they wanted. They, you know, could sit down, have tea, whatever, but they were not allowed to move beyond that point on the road. Now, I mean, it might be more open, I don't know, but I really doubt that I have any relatives I'd be able to find who might still be there.
Yeah. When I listen to your story, this sounds kind of saccharine almost, but it made me proud to be an American. I thought, what a great country.
Mm-hmm. I've always felt that way when I think about my family.
It's a country
coming
where
over
immigrants
here.
Can come, and sometimes the papers aren't even quite right. But they vote, they pay their taxes, they make this country great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
Absolutely.
Who we are. Mm-hmm. That's our identity. Yeah. I'm going to bring Hank in now. As most of our listeners know, he teaches courses in storytelling. He's even written a book about it. He's listened to thousands of stories from students and tellers on this show, and I certainly know he's told quite a few as well. Hank, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this story and maybe the previous story as well.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, if I could just bring coincidence in for a moment, because this is a coincidence. Yeah. I mean, Nancy, did you think that you'd be sitting with a 35-year-old handsome Jewish guy who knows Yiddish? Okay, part of that's true. Part of that's true. Part of it's true.
But we know that you know Yiddish.
All right, okay. Thank you very much. Very good. And you were bar mitzvah in 1970, and that disappoints me. I thought we were the same age. But you're even younger than me. Everyone is. Do you know your Haftorah, though? Do you know the name of it?
With Shabbat HaChodesh.
You're positive?
I absolutely was. Okay, Ezekiel fine. Chapter 43.
Okay, mine was Chayesara.
Just one. Oh, that's a good one.
What do you mean that's a good one?
It's
what
a
is that?
Story.
Is this, yes, it is.
Can
I'm
you
glad
repeat
that, you
that
know
name,
it.
Dr. Hank? Repeat that.
Chayesara, the life of Sarah. Yeah.
Genesis 23.
But if I could just say this word for a moment, seriously, because this is an example, because you know that. That my mother and my grandparents were survivors. I was raised by my grandparents and my mother, and they're from Lithuania. My mother was born in Germany. They left Vilna because of the pogroms, and they moved to Germany because they felt it was safe. And, of course, the rest is an unfortunate history. But there are a lot of coincidences, and this is just one of them, and I know you want to ask me about that a little bit.
Okay.
Well, you know, coincidences are weird. And they're wonderful and they're mysterious because we're coming up on Memorial Day and the 4th of July. You know, two coincidences of many, many, many historical significant ones come to mind. For example, when John Adams and Thomas Jefferson died the same day, it was the 4th of July. And Adams' last words were, "Jefferson survives." And, of course, Thomas Jefferson died six hours prior to that. But they both died on the 4th of July. Come on, right?
Yeah.
November 11th of 1859, there was a gentleman by the name of Edwin Booth, John Wilkes' brother, who was standing at a Washington, D.C. train station. And there was a young man next to him who tripped and almost fell off the landing onto an oncoming train. And he saved his life. And that young man was Todd Lincoln. And, of course, you know, we know that Edwin's brother, John Wilkes, assassinated the president later. But there are coincidences all over the place. But when I hear your stories, and Warren's giving me too much credit because I'm not by any means a storytelling specialist. I'm studied communication theory, and I apply a few things, and here's what I do know. I know that when we're very young, what's really intriguing is that we remember things in a much smaller scale. You know, we remember things and how we lived in it. We enact our lives. We remember the schoolyard being miles long, and it's really only 50 feet, right? We remember walking an hour and a half to school when it was essentially 5 minutes. We remember walking up a really, really steep hill in the snow. It was like a little bump in the road, right? And then as we get older, I think we have a different notion about storytelling. It's a different kind of amplification. So sometimes we assimilate. We want to take a body of information and place it into a system of thought that makes sense to us. And we see reality in our own perceptual world, because the perception and reality are the same things, or else we're asked to choose between two things when we only see one. We also have a need, through storytelling, to get approval. So, for that reason, our stories about hurt are a little deeper. Our stories about kissing someone is a little bit longer. Our stories of loss might be a little more tragic. We amplify that, and I think that every good storyteller has a license for amplification. And I think that amplification is what fuels the different ways that we remember a story, Warren, if that makes any sense.
And if it's a kissing story, our memory might really amplify.
Oh, my God. All of mine did. Every one of them. I mean, the kisses that I had were insurmountable. They were really, as a matter of fact, they were miniature Harlequin romances, each and every time out.
Well, Mark said that he was destined to be a romantic lead on Broadway.
There you go.
Oh, no, in the movies. I grew up in Southern California.
But you know something Nancy said earlier, I think you said it, Mark, that no matter how we see the story, we come back in being the story, just like in the film Big Fish, we become a part of that story. That's always an amazing conclusion for me.
If you're just joining us, this is So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. You can catch us at 89.5 in Galveston and 91.1 91.9 in Huntsville. And from anywhere in the solar system, you can listen the way the astronauts do, www.kpft.org. So, Hank, were you there when Mark told his coincidence story?
I was, and I loved it.
Yeah?
I really, really loved it.
Would you like hear it again?
I would love to hear it again. And I bet we're about to hear it again.
Hey, how about if I tell it
again? No, this is a great story. There are some stories you want to hear over and over again. Yeah. And trust me, listeners, this is one of them.
I agree.
Okay, so when I was growing up, my mother would often tell a very short story about the time when she was 18 years old and went on a student tour to Europe, and she fainted going up the Eiffel Tower. And that was the entire story. There was no ending. She just fainted. So Nancy and I live a block from Braes Bayou, and we often take walks along the bayou in the spring and summer after dinner. And we often pass this Russian couple, and we nod and smile at them, and then we continue on. Little over 3 years ago, well, 3.5 years ago, we were visiting our son, who is working on his PhD at Brown in Providence, Rhode Island. And so it was a lovely fall evening. We were walking along the river in downtown Providence, and all of a sudden, my wife says, "There's that Russian couple." And I'm looking and I'm going, "No, it can't be." But I'm kind of like walking and, you know, it's dusk. It's hard to see. I said, "You know, I think it looks like them, but it's not them." And we kind of agreed, no, it wasn't them. And the following summer, so about 3 years ago, to celebrate our 30th anniversary, we took a trip to Alaska. And we were having dinner at a pizza joint in Anchorage one evening, and all of a sudden, this look comes over my wife's face as she's facing the street, you know, looking out the window at the street, and she goes, "There's that Russian couple." And I turn and I say, "Oh my God, I think it is." And I tear out of that restaurant and I'm running down this crowded street till I can get close enough to them, and I didn't stop them or see anything, but I was close enough, and I go back into the restaurant. I said, it was them. So we returned to Houston, and later that summer, we're walking along the bayou, and of course, we see them. So the man, they were actually kind of walking separately. So the man, we stopped the man and introduced ourselves, and he said his name was German. And we said, "Were you in Alaska last month?" And he said, "Yes, we were." And we said, "We saw you in Anchorage." And by this time, his wife came up. His wife, her name's Anna. And he said, "Hey, they saw us in Anchorage. We were there at the same time." And then we said, "Were you in Providence last fall?" And Anna said, "No." But then German said, "Yes. We were driving from Boston to New York. And we stopped one evening just to stretch our legs, and we were walking along the river in Providence." And I said, "We saw you there too." So these events reminded me of something that happened in the summer of 1981. I was a graduate student at U of H, and I decided to take a trip by plane and train around the United States. My sister was graduating college. I had friends I wanted to visit in various places. I had two weddings to go to. So I just took 6 weeks of traveling all over the country. And I had friends from college who were living in Philadelphia, and I wanted to see them, but they actually were not going to be in Philadelphia at that time. So I had a friend from U of H. We were active in various Jewish causes there. Her name was Sue, and she's actually from Coatesville, Pennsylvania, which is about 40 miles outside of Philadelphia. So I called her, and I said, "Sue, can I come and stay with you for the weekend?" And she goes, "Sure, come on out." So I took the train out to Coatesville, and one evening, a whole bunch of us went out to dinner. Her parents, Sue, one of her brothers, me, and her two hysterically funny great aunts. And so, you know, we were talking, and for some reason, I was inspired to tell this short story about two of my hysterically funny great aunts, which actually happened right after my grandfather, who I previously had been talking about, was actually hit by a car and killed while crossing Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood. And so after the funeral, we were back at the house, and we, I guess, should have been sitting Shiva. But instead, his two sisters, my great aunt Bessie and great aunt Yetta, had come out from Chicago for the funeral. And they were telling stories, and my sister and I were laughing so hard. I mean, this is an hour after the funeral. We were clutching ourselves. We were laughing so hard. So after I tell this story at the dinner, my friend Sue's father says, "Where is your mother from?" And I answered, "Well, this was my father's family, but both my parents are from Chicago." And then my friend's father asked me, "Did your mother go to Europe in the summer of 1949? And I said, "Yes, she did." And then my friend's father asked me, "Did she faint going up the Eiffel Tower?" And I said, "Yes, she did." And then my friend's father said, "I caught her when she fell." And just like that, my mother's story had an ending. And I know that one day, one of my grandchildren is going to be trekking through the Himalayas or cruising down the Amazon or maybe sipping a latte at a cafe on the Champs-Élysées, and they're going to strike up a conversation with some stranger. And that stranger, for some reason, is going to tell the story of their grandparents, German and Anna, who immigrated from Russia to Houston and would see this couple walking along the bayou every day after dinner, and this couple would see them everywhere they went. And I think that that's the reason that we have these coincidences as we travel around the world, because we have to meet the people who can finish our stories for us.
I love that story. I love it. We have to love that story. I was just, sort of nodding to Warren because, the coincidences are so insurmountable. They really are right here in the studio. I mean, what I see is a very sensitive, culturally rich couple with a real pulse on their heritage, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm a docent at the Holocaust Museum. I've been doing it since 1996. And Warren, who's very humble, won't tell you this, but he is a very brilliant playwright. I've seen his plays. And he works with Holocaust themes. So, I mean, these themes, these motifs that we're talking about are so inextricably related to who we are. They really define us. I just think it's uncanny.
What do you all make of all these coincidences? Do you see it?
We're not making them up. Yeah. Got to have something to say, folks.
I mean, is there some metaphysical explanation, or is it more that you're noticing the connections that are there that just people are not? Nancy's got a theory.
Nancy is the most wonderfully polite interrupter I've ever seen in my
life. The word for you. You're a Yiddish speaker, sort of. Bashert.
What do you mean, sort of? What does that mean?
Bashert is a Yiddish word, right, which means it's faded.
That's right.
Bashert?
It's faded.
That's right.
Bashert.
Bashert. Bashert.
Mark and I were, yes, Bashert for each other. He's my Bashert. I'm his Bashert, yep, our faded one. Bashert, there's some things that are just supposed, yeah, to happen.
And is it because my mother never said that about all my 19 wives? She never said, "Oh, they're Bashertims." Been married twice. She never said that. That's another story for another time.
But I'll tell you that actually, when I first started listening to The Moth, and I said, "Ooh, get in front of an audience and tell stories. That sounds like fun." I thought, you know what? This story of, meeting my friend's father who knew my mother, I said, that would make a great story. And then this thing happened with Anna and German, who we haven't seen for a while. But
We
haven't been out on the bayou too much lately, yeah. But I thought, there's something related there. And I actually remember I'd be maybe riding my bike, or because I spend so much time walking around at work, getting from one place to another, I was trying to think, how can these stories be related? And it kind of occurred to me. I said, you know what? Meeting my friend's father helped me end my mother's story. That's all she ever said. She didn't say, someone caught me. There was some dashing gendarme carried her in his arms off to the hospital. Nothing. It's like, I was in the Eiffel Tower, the elevator going up, and I fainted. It's like, what is this? And then it's like, okay, somebody caught you and made sure you were okay. And this happened, I shouldn't say it, 1949. And I met him in 81, so
That's 32 years later. You know, just out of the blue. And there are so many things that had to happen for me to meet my friend's father. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people say, people even ask me after the story, how did he know to ask about your mother? Which I didn't include in the story, but anyone, my wife will vouch for this, anyone who knows me and anyone who knows my mother would understand that that is, there's no question about why he would ask that. Our mannerisms and the way we look and I guess the way we act is very similar.
I'm struck that I've kind of been inspired tonight, and I'm thinking to think of my life as a story that I'm writing, and I hopefully I'll have be able to author my own life story, so to speak. But the new element that you all have added to this is that really it's a community effort to it's written not just by me, but me in collaboration with who knows who else in the world is writing, helping me write that story.
None of us are as good as all of us. You just can't possibly know anything without other people. Just not possible.
There is one other coincidence that we didn't mention. My daughter was visiting from Austin. She said, "Who's your guest on the show this week?" And I said, "Mark Pikus." She said, "Is he related to Daniel Pikus?"
Daniel yes. Pikus is our son.
And they'd gone to high school together, it turns out.
And you and I did not know that.
Absolutely not.
I said, "Well, did you ever meet Mark Pikus?" She said, "I don't remember, but I'm pretty sure that Mark's mother, Daniel's mother came to a soccer practice."
Well, that would have been Aaron, our other son.
Yeah. And my daughter was sort of organizing the team, I guess. It was kind of a student effort. She was a senior when Aaron was a freshman, right? Yeah. So she remembers you.
How about that?
So as a wise person once said, it's a small world, but I'd sure hate to have to paint it.
And whenever Mark would go to pick up Daniel after play practice at Carnegie.
Well, it happened once.
It wouldn't matter. They would say, "Oh, Daniel, your dad's here."
Well, one time I went to pick him up, and
they would know.
Auditions, actually, and he saw me come in. He got up to leave, and I said, "We don't have to go. You can stay for a while." So later he told me that a friend had seen me come in and turned to him and said, "Daniel, your dad is here." So he walked over to me. Then when he sat down, he realized this friend had never met me, and he said, "How did you know that was my dad?" And the friend said, "Daniel, have you looked in a mirror recently?"
And Daniel, now, you didn't mention this, but he was in your story, too.
Yeah. He's the one we visited in Providence. And he, God willing, will be finishing his dissertation in December. And we're not paying for it, though, so he can take as long as he wants, I guess.
But. And speaking of storytelling and continuation of a culture through storytelling, tell our listeners what his dissertation topic is. Good luck.
The reading practices for women as prescribed by the early church fathers and the Talmudic rabbis.
Meaning back around 300 AD.
That's going to take him a couple of decades.
He has one more chapter to go.
Well,
when my daughter mentioned this, I knew that this was you because she said, "Well, Daniel's up in Providence, Rhode Island." She had kept up with him through Facebook, I guess. So that's kind of cool. The story was interesting to me just on another, the surprise. When you mentioned the mysterious Russian couple, I mean, I guess because of all the events in the news, I went somewhere else. I thought that story was going somewhere else because it seemed like everywhere you went, they were. I mean, it sounds like a 1940s...
Cloak and dagger mystery.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
This is not that couple.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I think it's almost time for tips for the teller. Friends, this is going to sound like a 1950s... pop song, a rather schmaltzy 1950s pop song. But my tip tonight is to be a good teller, be sincere. This means being straightforward and honest and authentic. It's that authenticity that enables your listeners to connect with you. It's not you entertaining them or being cool or funny. It's more about just being yourself, being authentic. Sometimes when I go to the Moth, the tellers called on or come from a stand-up comedy background, and they have great stories, but sometimes I feel they try too hard to perform rather than simply tell the story. I feel they put on a mask to tell the story. And as a result, the stories, they kind of lose their audience a bit. So I would encourage you to feel your story, to feel your story deep inside yourself, to sort of tell the story to yourself first, and out of that depth let the story come so that your audience can connect with you, not with your shtick and your showing off, but with the story itself. Let the story speak for itself. Be real. Be who you are. Be sincere. And I see that we're just about out of time. So, Mark and Nancy, you shared stories of your journeys of discovery, discovering your family of origin and yourself in the process. You've prodded us to reflect on the role of memory in shaping our understanding of reality. You've shown us how the activities and interactions of life are so inextricably connected. It's been a delight having you on the show. Mark, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me. I've enjoyed it.
And Nancy, thank you.
Thank you. I never thought I'd be doing this, but I've enjoyed it.
I was scared to death I was going to be doing marriage counseling here, and you all have behaved honorably.
We've been married too long.
And to all our listeners, have a safe and meaningful Memorial Day weekend. As our previous engineer and friend, Specialist Jacob Reiner, always reminded us, if you see a veteran this weekend, don't say Happy Memorial Day. Just say thank you for your service. Brian and Jason are next with To Tell the World, another class act on 90.1 KPFT. Make us a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story. Can you keep loving great stories? We'll keep bringing them to you. Until next week, Mark, Hank, Nicole Rocher-Lynn, Greg and I, and Mary, I forgot her, remind you that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Great. Okay.
People are always talking about the stock market, always looking to invest in a good opportunity, something with the potential to grow. So what if you could invest in the future of kids, like a stock? Not the kind of stock that's about making money, but a stock for social change. A whole new kind of investment called Better Futures from UNCF. Your investment can help students go to college, which ends up making the future better for everybody. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. A message from UNCF and the Ad Council. KPFT, Houston.
By joining KPFT's Sustainer program this hour, you can support your local non-commercial station and help KPFT reduce its pledged drives. Rather than giving a yearly gift, Sustainers give a monthly donation that continues as long as you want. Giving 5, 20, 100, or more monthly helps change the way KPFT works. Sustainers help us meet our operating expenses without days and days of on-air fundraising. That means less pledge drive, more efficiency, and greater stability for KPFT, regardless of the time of year. Again, visit KPFT.org to make a difference today. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, KPFT.org worldwide.